I think there's a large cohort of OG ETH people mm-hmm. that have never done a Solana transaction.
Yeah.
Their first Solana transaction will be on Infinex. I guarantee you, mm-hmm. like for the majority of like OG ETH people, their first time that they use Solana will be on Infinex without even realizing it.
Welcome to Bankless, where we explore the frontier of DeFi platforms eating CeFi banks. Today on the show, we have Kane Warwick, hot on the heels of the $65 million patron sale from his brand new platform, Infinex. Kane thinks that DeFi is already better than centralized crypto platforms like Binance, except the only issue is that all the quality DeFi apps are fragmented across the crypto universe. Different apps on different chains, all creating and providing a ton of world-class products, but with dogshit UX for users. According to Kane, we are no longer in the era of educating users into self-custodial private keys, or learning DeFi interfaces one by one, or chain swapping our assets to get there. According to Kane, in 2024, we have the technology to create one seamless interface, abstracting all the chains and integrating together all of the DeFi apps. The thesis is simple. Take all the best of what DeFi has to offer and package it up into a single interface. Abstract everything in the background using intents, solvers, and chain abstraction tools like Gelato and Near. And with this, you can even use Litecoin or XRP, which to this day have large masses of users who keep their funds on Binance because that's what they do, and integrate those assets into Infinex as well. If Infinex works, I expect it to unlock crypto for the next wave of users, because we already know that cudgeling users into self-custody and private keys is an exhausted opportunity. What we need is the next wave of technology to onboard the next billion users, and Kane thinks that he's cracked the code with the technology that we have in 2024. As a disclaimer, both Bankless Ventures and myself are Infinex patrons. We're excited about what Kane is building and how aligned it is with the Bankless mission, so how could we not be? And for those eager to see me and Kane Warwick go head-to-head in karate combat on October 11th, we, of course, chat about that too at the very end of the podcast. So let's go ahead and get right into the episode with Kane Warwick from Infinex. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Uniswap wallet is officially the preferred wallet of Bankless, and it's the one we use anytime when we want to transact on-chain. Whether you're on your browser or on the go, Uniswap wallet makes it easier than ever to swap anytime, anywhere. Use your wallet to transfer funds directly from a top centralized exchange and tap from thousands of tokens across Ethereum and over 10 other chains like Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. Uniswap wallet delivers deep liquidity, fast execution, and reliable quotes with zero gas swaps through Uniswap X. And when it comes to security, you can rest easy knowing it's backed by Uniswap Labs, one of the most trusted teams in DeFi. Their code is open source and independently reviewed, so you know it's protected. So why wait? Download the Uniswap wallet today on Chrome, iOS, and Android. And don't forget to claim your free uni.eth username directly in the mobile wallet. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in web Three. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Bankless Nation, I'm here with Kane Warwick, father of modern yield farming, benevolent ex-dictator of synthetics, owner of mansions, and now founder of Infinex. Kane, welcome back to Bankless.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Infinex is the tip of the chain, the tip of the Kane Warwick chain, the most recent thing that you have committed your life to. Talk about that a little bit. Like, what's the thesis behind it? What is it? Why does the world need it?
Yeah, the thesis is on-chain Binance, which I think is something that has been around for a while, this idea that, you know, we want to bring everyone on chain. I don't think that we were quite ready to do it. I don't think we had all of the tech in place to be able to do it, even though we thought we did. You know, one of the interesting things about this new journey, stepping back from building protocols and building a, you know, something that's more like a user interface, has been realizing all of the weird coping strategies as a DeFi founder that I think, you know, I needed to live by. So there's a bunch of stuff that has, you know, kind of popped out for me that I'm like, oh, wow, we actually were a bit further away from this than I thought.
Mm-hmm. What is on-chain Binance? How would you define that?
This is the interesting thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you talk to a lot of DeFi people, I think they would say, oh, no, we've already got that. It's right. called DeFi. It's over here, yeah. right? And, you know, okay, let's break that down, right? DeFi over here is the Aave interface mm-hmm. and the Drift interface and the Uniswap interface and all of these like interfaces that are individual features that Binance has, right? Mm-hmm. And for the average user, navigating a bunch of different interfaces, understanding how to connect to them, understanding that you bring your own wallet, there's no, you know, global account or anything like that, is very difficult.
Right.
And that's why they stay on Binance. Mm-hmm. But even more importantly, even if you believed that this were true, that this, you know, fragmented ecosystem of individual feature-based interfaces was better, we actually don't even have all the features, right? If you talk to a Binance user, and we've talked to a bunch of Binance users, we've talked to people in a bunch of exchanges over the last 18 months, the average Binance user, if we walked out on the street and said, hey, Binance users, you know, what do you want to do? We'll say, I want to deposit XRP. That's the first thing they want to do.
Right.
You can't do that in DeFi.
Uh-huh.
There's no XRP. Not only is there no XRP, but we actually will then say, well, actually, you're an idiot. So go somewhere else. Right? And this is the reality that like most of what centralized exchanges do, we talk a lot about trading volume and fees and all of, you know, those are the things that make money. But what they do, like one of their core value props is they store people's crypto. That's it. They store people's crypto in a way where they're not going to lose it, right? So it's not self-custodial. It's, you know, a ton of counterparty risk, but it's what people like. It's right. what people use. And so we can keep building, hoping that people will want the things that we're building, mm-hmm. or we can actually ask a genuine question, what do you want? And then build that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Infinex is.
Okay, so there's a large cohort of crypto people, the deep crypto people who are very like values driven. Even if you're trading meme coins, like you probably still understand and appreciate the value of self-custody. And when this is something that we've been trying to espouse to the world, let's get the world on chain. Let's get everyone some private keys. And I think we've done a decent good job of populating that corner of the internet with our kind of people.
Yeah.
And then maybe what you're alluding to is like, well, that effort has actually kind of been exhausted. If you are a self-custody crypto person, there's not that many of those people, those types of people out there in the world that we haven't already found and put into our corner of the internet. And so I think maybe what you're alluding to is that Infinex is like the next step to getting the value of crypto ethos, like a bankless Binance that can like reach out to the next further out concentric circle of crypto
exactly.
people.
Who are in crypto. These are crypto users. Like right. they're daily active Binance users. They're in crypto. They're as in crypto as I am. We just say they're doing it wrong, right?
right?
And the funny thing is, right, we've been building for enthusiasts. And if this were any other industry, building for enthusiasts would have failed utterly years ago, mm-hmm. right? But crypto being what it is and tokens being what they are, there's such a powerful coordination mechanism. There's such a powerful monetization mechanism and incentive structure that we got hooked on our own supply.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, we are just killing it here. Like, this right. is amazing, right? Everything that we're doing is working so well, but we were building for enthusiasts and we ran out of enthusiasts.
Right.
And then when we ran out of enthusiasts, we buried our head in the sand and said, no, no, it's okay. We can make more enthusiasts. Right.
Mm. And the answer we simply just have to teach them.
Yes.
How to be
yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I've said this a couple of times, but some of the things that I believed, right, I think maybe even in one of the conversations that we had, I was like, no, no, it's good that private keys are so hard to manage because it makes people appreciate how good they are. Right. And it's like, no, like that's not how we get adoption.
Yes for some, no for most.
Sure. And the sum is tapped out.
Right.
We've tapped out those people, right? If you think about it like Linux, right? There was a period of time where Linux users, and I was one of them, had this view that like the year of the Linux desktop was like perpetually next year. Like next year, everyone's going to work out Linux, right? The irony of ironies is that Linux dominates the world, but it dominates it by being the infrastructure that people build things on top of, right? And, you know, all of the data centers in the world run on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what they run on. But we use Macs and we still use Windows machines, right? Like, you know, and I mean, even there's an argument like, you know, obviously OS X, you know, has its Unix, you know, history, whatever. But like for a user, for a genuine end user, you need to control the experience end to end. You know, this is like a very Jobsian thing, but like if you want to build good software, you got to build the hardware, right? Like you need to control the end to end experience, right? And we have a view at Infinex that if you want people to use crypto and be on chain, that you need to build an end to end experience, right? And optimizing for censorship resistance gives you a poor UX that only certain people are going to be willing to deal with, right? And so we are not censorship resistant, not today, right? But we are non-custodial. And that's the most important thing. We give people all of the things that are amazing about on-chain and we're non-custodial. But yes, someone could censor us, right? Someone could shut down the system. We're not nation state resistant today, you know? But my view is if we build a thing that is valuable enough, like those are technical problems that can be solved. We can decentralize, you know, that infrastructure such that, you know, maybe you don't get the perfect end-to-end user experience, but you can get something approaching it and we can get better and better over time. But you need to start with demand. If you have no demand for it and you haven't, you know, built an audience and built distribution, then building something that is maximally censorship resistant. Again, we've been doing, like in DeFi, you know, synthetics was maximally censorship resistant. You can't shut it down, right? You can't even shut down the interfaces. We've got pinned interfaces on IPFS that let you do the things that will be there for the rest of time, right? And so, you know, that is the fallback that we have. But we're trying to bring people on chain and you got to meet them where they live.
I want to kind of pop open the hood and take a look at what Infinex actually looks like from like the tech stack.
Sure.
We're calling this on-chain Binance. Binance has like a front end, an interface. It's also got like engines and, you know, custodial systems. How is Infinex similar? What does it have that's similar and what does it have that's different?
So what Infinex does that is different to Binance is it doesn't commingle funds. So each user has their own account, right? Which is a smart contract or a program or, you know, soon, right? We'll be using near chain signatures so that you will have a smart contract that will control a wallet address on the Litecoin network, for example, right? And so you'll be able to deposit native Litecoin into Infinex and control it through this non-custodial interface, right? You sign a message using a passkey and it will translate that message, send it to the Litecoin network. And I mean, it won't do anything because no one does anything with Litecoin, but like it'll let you put your Litecoin there and it's a safer place to put it, right?
Because if you're a Litecoin user, that is what you use it.
That's what you use it for. Like more so than even Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin kind of pivoted away from just like a pet rock to like, you know, it does stuff again now, right? There's runes and ordinals and L2s and all kinds of fun stuff that's emerged. Litecoin doesn't have that. Litecoin is like purely an asset that you hold, right? And same with XRP.
Right.
But there are huge segments of the market. And this is the really interesting thing, right? If you go down CoinGecko from top to bottom, go through the 30 assets, there's like 10 solidly that DeFi doesn't really touch, right? Or doesn't touch well. You know, maybe you've got wrapped versions, synthetic versions, but like you can't really get them into DeFi on Solana or Ethereum or, you know, Cosmos or Pog, like none of these ecosystems let you do that. And so Infinex gives you the ability to do that. It also gives you the ability to access the features that Binance offers as a full stack application running on a database on chain.
Okay.
So an example of that is if you want to margin trade,
right?
So if you want to margin trade, you've got some ETH and you want to use that as margin to borrow some stables and trade, we take you to Aave. obviously, right?
In the back end. You don't take them in the front end.
In the front end, they just click a button and say, I want access to margin. I want to, you know, I've got some ETH and I want to borrow, you know, 1,000 USDC to trade Mudang. Cool. Okay, fine. We can do that, right? It doesn't matter that the ETH is on Arbitrum and is going to be borrowed via Aave on Arbitrum, and the USDC will then be bridged over to Solana or whatever. Like, none of that matters.
Is Mudang on Solana?
I don't know, actually.
Let's act that it is. Yeah. So, like, I've got ETH on Arbitrum.
Sure.
I put my ETH into Infinex.
Yep.
I borrow stables on Arbitrum's version of Aave.
Yes.
And then Infinex will allow me to take those stables over to Solana and buy Mudang.
Yep.
And I don't know about any chain.
You don't know about any chain. It's completely abstracted away. I said this on Twitter the other day. I think that there's a large cohort of OG ETH people that have never done a Solana transaction.
Yeah.
Their first Solana transaction will be on Infinex. I guarantee you, like, for the majority of, like, OG ETH people, their first time that they use Solana will be on Infinex without even realizing it.
Right.
They'll be like, ah, whiff, okay.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine, because they can get the deniability.
Yeah, like, ah, it's not me, right? It's funny. It happened the other way around where, you know, we had this yield farming thing and one of the Solana guys was like, wait a second, I don't want to be farming on Base. And I'm like, yeah, you don't really get a choice, right? Like, you put your, like, it just does the thing where the thing happens, right? Same thing with Bull Run. We've got this mini you know, trading game. It happens on Blast. Doesn't matter if you like Blast or not. That's where it happens, right?
I've played that game. I had no idea it was on Blast.
Yeah, like, it's on Blast, right? Yeah. So, you know, these things are happening on different chains, chains that you may never have interacted with, right? And, you know, it's only going to expand. We're going to have another, you know, 10 chains next year, right? Or 15 chains. And so, you know, almost definitely balance the probabilities your first IBC transaction will be via Infinex.
Oh, interesting.
Like,
okay.
Because other than to, like, farm some airdrop, like, Dimension or something, like, who has installed one of those weird wallets? Like, you just haven't, right? Like, you're like, oh, I've got MetaMask. It's bad enough, right? I don't need anything else. So all of this stuff happens in the background. You get access to on-chain protocols on various networks. You get bridged across to wherever you need to be, and you get access to the features you want. And the features that people on Binance want, right? Because again, we're not targeting enthusiasts, we're targeting the existing Binance user. They want storage. They want to store their assets, right? Safely. And for them, safe is not non-custodial. Safe is a vibe.
Right.
Safe is a feeling, right? They like CZ. He does weird...
Funds are safe.
Yeah, literally. Like, he does weird stuff. He's super rich. He's probably not going to rug them. Like, who knows, right? But it's a vibe. They don't care about custody, non-custody, whatever. They just want a vibe that feels safe. So this is the reason why it's so important that we have a broad cohort of patrons, right, in the Infinex ecosystem. Because how does someone who's on Binance get that vibe of safety? They get it from someone on Twitter.
Right.
Someone on Twitter is like, hey, I did a deep dive into the tech and it looks great and whatever. And they're like, I trust this guy. He's a smart guy, right?
Passing his test passes my test.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, Hasu's looked into it and, you know, if he likes it, then I'm cool, right? Yeah, like, he's smarter than me. I don't know, right? So, like, sure, whatever. And so building up that vibe of safety that, like, this is a safe place for me to store my assets is really critical, right? That's like table stakes in my mind. And there's never been a DeFi platform that has been able to accept all of the top 100 assets natively, non-custodially. It wasn't even possible until, like, this year, really, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's come together, pass keys, turnkey, near-chain signatures. All of this stuff has come together that's allowed us to do it. And then you go, okay, what else? As a user, I've got some assets on this platform now. What do I want to do? I want to do spot trading. I just want to swap, you know, I want to buy some Mudang, or I want to buy some Whiff, or I want to buy Pepe, or, you know, I want to buy some new meme coin or whatever, or I want to buy Sky. I heard that it's rebranding. It's cool. There's this rebalancing thing. Like, you know, let's buy some DeFi tokens, right? Whatever it is, it doesn't matter, right? So you've got some Bitcoin and you want to buy Sky. That's easy on Binance, right? Binance abstracts the chains away in an incredible fashion, right? So you can do that very easily on Binance. You can't do that very easily on DeFi.
Right.
We're going to make it easy for people to do that. Yeah, sell 0.01 of a BTC and, you know, buy some DeFi tokens. Cool. Right. So we do all of that. We add margin. We add some lending. We add some staking. And the best thing is, each of these marginal things that we add, each new feature that we add, not only are there like 10 amazing solutions that exist for it, right? You know, whether it's LRTs, LSTs, you know, all kinds of stuff, but it costs us nothing.
Right.
The integration.
Because you don't develop it.
We're not building protocols. Protocol's already there, right?
DeFi already's built the value.
It's there.
You're just packaging it and selling it
exactly.
to the customer.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned like there's 10 different offerings, often of the same type in crypto. There's like five different platforms to go margin long. How do you manage that hairiness in the back end, right? Like whether you want to deposit into Aave or Compound or any other lending protocol might be determined by the yields. Maybe Morpho is giving the better yields today. How do you like package up and make sure you're actually offering the best in that one moment that DeFi is offering? How do you manage this complexity?
Yeah, it's a very good question, both from like a user perspective and I think also like a philosophical perspective as well. Mm-hmm. What are we optimizing for?
Right.
This is the other reason why it's so important we have a broad range of patrons who are, you know, governing the system, because we need as much input as possible into this process. We don't want to be necessarily, you know, kingmakers or picking winners. I think in the short term, Lindy is probably the biggest determinant for me, right? Like if I were the benevolent dictator of Infinex and I could just make decisions and do whatever I wanted, I would pick something like Aave for reasons, right? Because, you know, and probably I'd pick something like Aave on, you know, mainnet and Arbitrum, like the place where it has the most depth, the most assets, the, you know, to make it easy, right? Because there's an argument that if Binance builds a feature and it breaks in, you don't lose money by doing the thing, right? Like you kind of can't, you can lose money in Binance, but not that way, right? Yeah. You're probably not going to lose money by clicking a button and Binance, you know, nukes the, you know, ETH or whatever, right? Like they do some weird thing where they pay too high a gas fee or something like that. That's on them, right?
Right.
So this is different because it's non-custodial. And so Infinex is not necessarily covering your losses. So we probably in the early phase need to optimize for safety over anything else, right? Mm-hmm. You know, building up a reputation for safety and also building up a reputation for letting the user opt in. Mm. You know, all of the things that you do as an Infinex user, you opt into. You upgrade your account. No one else can upgrade your account. You have an account that is a, you know, perfect blank slate when you first get it set up.
Right.
It doesn't connect to anything.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that you can lose that money is if that account itself is hacked, right?
Right.
But it's not connected to Aave. It's not connected to Uniswap. It's not connected anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, I want to do Uniswap. Opt in. Okay. I want to do Aave. Opt in. And you choose, right? So if you want to enable Cream Finance 3,
right?
Like, I mean, you should know what you're doing, right? First of all, and there'll be some disclaimers around like, hey, just a heads up, you are going to lose all of your money here. This thing gets hacked every single time, right? You know, and so those are the types of things that we've got to balance.
Sure. Sure. Is there a world where like, maybe I'm like, there's like 18 different perps platforms in crypto and maybe I'm coming in with size. Maybe I'm like actually going to like kind of nuke the order books if you put me into one order book. So maybe is there a world where you actually kind of like spread my order across three different service providers, backend service providers?
So here's maybe a similar answer, but for a different use case, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, let's say you have size, right? Let's say you have $10 million and you are borrowing stables against ETH.
Right.
Right. There's probably four or five different places where there's enough liquidity that you can do that, you know, comfortably, but the APY fluctuates.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe there's an opportunity to offload a mil or two of that to Arbitrum because of reasons or Optimism or Base or Blast or whatever. You probably can't take the whole 10 mil, but maybe you can offload 20% of it because there's enough of a delta in the interest rate that you're paying that it's worth it.
Right.
Right. So that exists, right? You've got all those venues. You, as the user, can opt into which ones you're okay with, right? And you might say, listen, Cream Finance, no, thanks. I don't want that. I don't want Cream Finance on Blast, right? But I'm happy to do Maker. I'm happy to do Sky, right? I'm happy to do Aave. I'm happy to do Morpho. Any of those are fine. I'm happy to do Liquidy, right? So I'm happy to do Liquidy. I'm happy to do these things. These are all cool, right? And so you opt into that. And then the system, having got your opt-in, can actually optimize for you within those constraints, right? And you can set some kind of threshold where, like, if the APY delta increases by more than 10%, then rebalance.
Right.
And it can do it for you. And, you know, you just need to work out what the cost is in terms of moving the funds around. And you can kind of pre-authorize all of that stuff because it's in your account that you are the only one that can sign a transaction for it. And then you basically say, within these constraints, these things can happen, right?
Okay.
It's like an intents-based system and it can rebalance for you. So you could imagine you've got a perps position open to answer your question directly. And some new perps protocol pops up and you're like, well, if the funding rate is less than X, I'm willing to offload up to 10% of my thing, or maybe there's a farming opportunity or whatever it is, right? And so, you know, that system can monitor your positions and rebalance them for you in real time very easily. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we can do this and other platforms struggle to do it is because if you want to do all of that on chain, first of all, it's almost an intractable problem. It's not quite, but it's close to it, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to do it all on chain because we know we've got your passkey. We know signatures. We know you can pre-authorize and opt into all these different things. And so we can rebalance things for you in real time using our backend to construct a transaction with your pre-authorization to then send the transaction on chain. Mm. It's just a better system.
Right.
But it requires you have a platform, like a full stack application that can be censored.
Right. Yeah,
that's the trade, right? And so, you know, what's the downside then, right? Okay, you opt into that. It's rebalancing. Everything's going great. And then the moon decides that they hate crypto, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to come in and they're nuking all the AWS data centers that are doing crypto stuff, mm-hmm. right? And AWS goes, all right, we're shutting down any crypto things and, you know, lights go out, mm-hmm. all of crypto's off, right? If that sort of thing happens, what can you do? The answer is you can still get out.
Right.
You can go, there's an escape hatch that you can go directly on chain and you can hit a button and it doesn't require, I could get hit by a bus. It doesn't require anyone at Infinex managing this. You can just go directly on chain, pull your money out. What's the downside? You don't get your magical rebalancing APY machine anymore. Right. Now, I'm of the view that, you know, similarly to Uber, right? Demand is the best thing that you can possibly do in an adversarial regulatory environment. Mm. Creating demand, demonstrating that there is retail demand for a thing and that there's utility for it is the best defense that you can muster for adversarial regulators. Mm. And my view is that we haven't done a great job of that, right? That's actually, we tried the education thing and then we kind of had this epiphany, oh no, they're trying to kill us, okay? And then we went from they're trying to kill us to what's next,
right?
More education doesn't work if someone's trying to kill you.
Right, yeah.
Answer is build an army,
right? Yeah.
Become unkillable, right? And the only way we're going to become unkillable is if we have 10 million people that are doing on-chain transactions every day, and you go to try and censor that thing, and those 10 million people are going to have a conversation with whoever's trying to censor it.
Right, 10 million people who feel like you're attacking their home.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, can we talk about some of the secret sauce, the technology that Infinex has in 2024 that really has unlocked some of the opportunities that Infinex is building? You mentioned passkeys. What's some of the cool things that when people use Infinex that they'll be exposed to that really unlocks this experience?
I mean, probably the biggest thing is it is a platform, right? It is not a normal DeFi application where you just have this narrow strip of utility, right? It is a platform where you can do all the things. Mm-hmm. That in and of itself is quite different, right? From most of what we've seen in DeFi. We've seen aggregation platforms before where, you know, they try and aggregate a couple of different things, but this is like fully featured. We're giving you all the stuff, right?
So every single financial tool that DeFi has to offer
will be there.
Is it in the platform?
Exactly.
Okay.
And will be in the platform either directly or in an aggregated fashion, you know, where you're agnostic to what the best place to get yield on your ETH is, right? Mm-hmm. It will find it for you. Now, you may have a preference to not go somewhere. You're like, I don't want to do this thing, but everything else on the list I'm fine with, just no cream finance, right? Okay, cool. Opt out of that, enable the other ones, and it will do the work for you, right? And so, you know, turning up to a platform and saying, oh, wow, I didn't realize I could do X, right? I've got this token, you know, whatever that token may be. I didn't know I could stake it. Who knew that Jito Sol existed, right? For a Binance user, they've got Sol on Binance and like, you know, maybe they got an email 6 months ago offering to stake it for them, but they didn't see it or like, you know,
don't know what that means.
They don't know what that means. It was weird. And like, so there's a discovery
problem. Who's Jito?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a thing where it's like, we're going to give you all of the things that you want in a single platform, right? And the amazing thing for DeFi, if you, you know, kind of take that to its logical conclusion, is that a new DeFi primitive doesn't need to build demand side, right? And build distribution for whatever it is doing, mm-hmm. right? Especially mm-hmm. things like a novel instrument. It's right. kind of insane that someone's like, oh, we've built this new VIX protocol. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, and we're standing up our own interface and right. hoping that people come and use it.
Please come take your money out of this other interface and deposit it into madness. Our interface.
Madness. It's right. utter madness. Only enthusiasts would do that. Uh-huh. And even enthusiasts are over it.
Right.
Yeah. Even enthusiasts yeah, yeah. are like, honestly, this is dumb, mm-hmm. right? And so if, as an enthusiast, I turn up and there's a little banner that says, hey, there's a new Bitcoin VIX token. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. Like, and maybe it's only, you know, one in 50 people notice or care, right? Right. But it's there. Mm. I don't need to stumble upon some new interface, right? So that's the primary thing, is that we will be a distribution channel for all of the things in DeFi, for all of the chains, all the protocols will be there. The other thing is that if you have a platform like that that can communicate with you, and this is madness, honestly, but no one can communicate with DeFi people. The amount of time, like it happened to me literally 2 days ago, someone posted a message in a Telegram group being like, hey, is Kane in this Telegram group? Because I think I found a thing on chain that he should look at, uh-huh. right? And like, it turned out to not be me, but it's like the fact that it wasn't me was actually worse, because now we don't know who it was, right? Uh-huh. It's some person with an ENS that did something 4 years ago or whatever, and the money is still sitting there, and someone was like, hey, I stumbled across this thing. Like, you've got money sitting there. That's crazy. Mm. No one knows how to get in touch with this person.
Right.
Right? Right, like, right. If that were on Infinex, you'd be getting an email or a push notification or a banner when you logged in being right. like, hey, by the way, you left all your money in Cream Finance. You might want to take it right. out. Right? Right, right. Like, so there's an element of discovery and, you know, having a platform that has the ability to communicate, that is monitoring and knows what you do and, you know, can tell you, hey, there's a new airdrop, right? Like mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, I mean, Bankless does this, right? And I think mm-hmm. it does a good job of notifying people of airdrops, right. but like that should be a feature in a platform. Right. It shouldn't be a standalone right. product, right? And yeah. it kind of is with Bankless, right? Yeah. But you know, it should be in the place where your assets are,
right?
Right? Like it should just go, oh, hey, by the way, there's a new thing, click a button, done. Mm-hmm.
Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. The Arbitrum portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge, and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. The word curation is coming to mind, where yeah. DeFi is the Wild West. And it's attracted the people who, you know, like that. They like the adventure. They like the risk. They like the rewards. And like we said at the beginning, we've kind of tapped out of those people.
Yeah.
And even though the expert people in the Wild West have kind of like settled, Like, you know, like, honestly, with most of my on-chain activity, it has collapsed back down to, like, Morpho, Aave, and Matcha.
Yeah.
That's, like, 90% of my things. And I think the way that we scale this is some level of curation where, like, you, Infinex, is just going to curate the activities in DeFi that represent 90, 95% exactly. of the high-value, useful, trusted activities collapsing into one single platform and kind of softening the edges of DeFi by like allowing, not necessarily like showing open the doors to like the deepest, most degenerate corners of DeFi, because most of those corners are bad UX. Mm. Like that's where you kind of lose the money and or the products don't work or something. The experimental corners of DeFi.
Yeah.
Infinex is itself experimental in that no one has done this before, but I don't think you guys are incorporating the experimental edges of DeFi.
And we probably won't until... Right. You know, something gets to a level of traction, right?
Some sort of Lindy.
Yeah, but, you know, we also might, right? Mm. You know, there's a bunch of platforms right now that are trying to solve the misaligned incentives in Pump.Fun, right? Some of them are built by great teams. Like, they're good teams with good incentives. There's very little reason to not enable something like that, in my mind, right? Yeah. Now, there's a question of, like, token curation and, you know, solving that. But I think, you know, realistically, and this is the thing, right? If something launches that has solved some of the misalignment in Pump.Fun, right? Mm-hmm. We can roll that out in a week.
Right.
Like if we're really under pressure and we're like, okay, we need to enable this. Our users are screaming for it. You can roll that out in a week. Mm-hmm. Binance can't build a meme coin launch pad. Like they can't even build it anyway. But even if they really wanted to, incorporating something like Pump.Fun, it's just not viable for them, right?
Because Binance has to bootstrap its own product, its own internal
to build some kind of centralized wrapper around it, and you know, it would be janky, and you know, like even I look at Kraken, you know, I'm a OG Kraken customer, and I was following along with the trials and tribulations of the Kraken ETH staking journey, right? Mm-hmm. They must have spent ungodly amounts of money rolling that out, right? I don't know if they'll ever get ROI on it, right? Like, especially at 4%. So, you know, Infinex can roll out 10 different versions of ETH staking for like $20.
Right.
In 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's just so easy, right? Mm-hmm. They can be tokenized. You can wrap your ETH. You can, you know, do it on multiple chains. You can, you know, have an aggregator. Like, there's so many things that we can do. And one thing that DeFi does incredibly well is it makes the interfaces open and it makes, you know, the ability to compose it incredibly easy, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of one of the ironies, I guess, of Infinex, right? Infinex itself is not composable.
Right.
It leverages the composability of the protocols to allow for rapid integrations and rapid rollout of features.
Right. But Infinex itself is a walled garden that leverages the open jungle of DeFi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, if you don't like that, that's okay, right? But you've still got Aave.
Right.
You still go to the Aave interface or the Sky interface or whatever, right? Like, that's the fallback in my mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the funny thing is there's a lot of enthusiasts that are like, no, I prefer this, right? It's Cope. It's 100% Cope, right? You don't prefer having 25 tabs open and going to whichever tab you need to go to and figuring out which network you're connected to. And then Phantom is blocking MetaMask. Like, no one prefers that. That's actually insane to say that someone prefers that.
It's just
that.
What you're used to.
It's what you're used to. Yeah. And it's also how you made a lot of money.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we got rewarded with a lot of money for doing things that were kind of insane. And we're like, these must be good things. Mm-hmm. This is the right way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And now I think there'll be a new way to do it. And so, you know, a lot of the people who, I mean, even to your point with yourself, right? Like, you've collapsed your DeFi activities. I bet you would do more stuff if it wasn't such a nightmare to do it. If it was just there and you were like, yeah, click one button. Okay, I'll check out this new thing. Uh-huh. This looks cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks cool. I can see what it does. Okay, like, click a button, put some ETH in there. Mm-hmm. Let's see. You know, that discovery and curation side of things, I think it'll open up a longer tail of things that is just hard for, you know, a modern DeFi OG to maintain, you know?
I probably would have bought Mudang a lot sooner had not had to be concerned about like researching where the token is
exactly,
and how to get my assets.
Now I kind of need to know. It's funny. I was so busy in Singapore. I looked it up. It came out on the 18th, which is, I guess, like 11 days. You know, almost 2 weeks ago, right? It was right in Singapore. Singapore was so insane. Uh-huh. I saw it and I saw the memes popping up and I was like, I'm going to regret this. But like, I just had no time. I was like so focused. And then today I was like, huh, okay, 250 mil market cap. Yeah.
Okay. I was sharing Mudeng memes with a friend, a crypto friend, 5 or 6 days ago.
Yeah.
And we just, neither of us thought like, hey, maybe
I should monetize
that. There's a token out here somewhere. Didn't think about it.
Look, I mean, who knows? There's probably 10 Mudeng tokens, right? And like, same thing. I remember when I was on my meme coin arc, I bought the DGen on Solana. Mm-hmm. There was a DGen token on Solana before the base DGen token. And then when the base one came out, I faded it because I was like, I've already got that.
Right.
And then the DGen on Solana rugged and the base version. And I was like, yeah, like this is a hard game. It's not as easy as it looks.
Talk to me about the transaction experience. Because with Infinex, you're not logging in with your MetaMask. You're not signing in with Rabi. You're not connecting your ledger. But there are transactions happening. Talk to me about how that whole system works.
So we use a system of relayers and things like Gelato, various RPC providers to land transactions, whether it's on Solana or you know, one of the other EVM chains. And from a user perspective, you sign a message with your passkey, which goes to Turnkey, which unlocks your private key that only your passkey can unlock.
What's a passkey? What's Turnkey? What are these things?
Sure. So a passkey is Web2's response to all of the cool stuff that we built in Web3, my opinion, right? Like, obviously, there's very smart people in Web2. They've got huge problems in terms of authentication, right? Authentication has been a nightmare for decades now, right? And, you know, there are billions and billions of dollars at stake for these giant, you know, big tech companies to solve authentication. Like, how do I authenticate a user? The FIDO Alliance has landed on passkeys as a solution, right?
And basically, like a technical standard.
It's a technical standard, but it's a standard that they've all adopted. And like, people are, look, it's not, this is actually really funny, right? So it's not for everyone, right? And in fact, for some people, it's really not for them. So we had that conversation with Vitalik, right? And I was like, Vitalik, I'm building a new thing. Please, will you try it, right? And, you know, true to his word, he did. Someone actually asked me on another podcast, like, do you think that Vitalik will, you know, change his approach to DeFi after all of you guys had that conversation with him and, you know, put some pressure to, you know, maybe be more supportive of DeFi founders, right? Like, both in private and publicly. And, you know, I said to a few people after that conversation, you know, I've spoken to Vitalik a few times and my sense is that, like, once he's processed something, right, and it took, like, you know, a few minutes of like thinking about it, right? But, you know, I could see the cogs turning, right? And once he's processed something and understood that like it is, you know, internally consistent and like makes logical sense from
the puzzle piece fits.
Yeah. Like then he's like, click, okay, I missed that, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, better late than never, right? So I was cautiously optimistic, right? But I was like, I really want to see some, you know, behavioral change, right? Like, it's easy to say, yeah, I'm going to do more stuff, but, you know, will you actually deliver on it? And he's a busy guy, right? Like, you know, it's not easy, right? He's out there advocating, you know, for Ethereum to nation state leaders and stuff, right? Like, so, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do, but I think it's an important thing to do. And I really was hopeful that he would. And so he was like, hey, I'm going to check out this Infinex thing. And the funny thing is that his setup is, as you can imagine, not super standard, right? He's not using an iPad. And passkeys just didn't work, right? And so there are edge cases in passkeys. And he was kind of like, ah, this passkey thing is not like working for me, right?
Now, however passkeys work to be, if they're going to be incompatible with something, it's going to be incompatible with like the Fort Knox of crypto.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of interesting, right? It's like if you're on that bleeding edge, and I was really skeptical of passkeys at first, right? Like when our engineering team.
Are passkeys just like Web2 private keys?
Yes.
They're private keys, private keys in a password manager?
Literally, that's it. Okay. Or like in a secure enclave on the device, in the operating system as well. You know, so there's, whether it's Android phones or iOS phones, like it's been incorporated, like it's fully incorporated into the platforms. And so it's just a cryptographic key.
Right.
And so you have a cryptographic key that could sign a message And we then take that signed message that you must physically have on your device, right, in order for that to work. And you go and sign the message and send it to an MPC network, mm-hmm. right, that can then unlock your actual Ethereum private key or Solana private key and then sign a message that can be broadcast to the chain. Right.
And so the MPC network service. The MPC network is the thing that can unlock, that can access the private key without it being custodial.
Correct. Yes.
Right? So the MPC
network. This is turnkey, right. Which is made by the ex Coinbase custody team.
Okay.
So, you know, we're very happy with that as like the translation layer between passkeys. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to converge over time. Passkeys will be able to sign messages and you'll be able to store a private key inside of a passkey. Like there's some cool stuff that's coming, you know, probably going to take like 18 to 24 months.
Yeah.
But for now, we have this translation layer. And so you have a passkey on your device that, provided your device is secure, and most likely it's, you know, secured via iCloud behind Face ID or whatever, you can unlock that device, sign a message, it sends it to the MPC network, it unlocks your private key signs another message, broadcasts it to the chain, and now you own Mudang. Congratulations.
Billions of dollars of security research. So I can securely and non-custodial buy Mudang across chains.
Exactly. A tiny hippo. but the cool thing about it is that you click one button, right? Uh-huh. You see a thing, there's a banner that says, hey, Mudang. And you're like, this
fuck yes.
Yes. Bang. You're like, all right. And it's like, I don't even care what assets of mine you're using, right? Uh-huh. You're just like, YOLO, I want some of that, right? Yeah. And so, you know, it will go and figure out the cheapest route for you and say, okay, let's, you know, pull, you've got some stables, right? We'll pull some, you got $100 with a USDT on Tron, right? And we pull it off and we send it over to wherever Mudang lives and now you're sorted.
Okay, so in that example, there's $100 of USDT on Tron. Is that the actual funds that ultimately gets transported over to the right chain to actually buy the Mudang, or is there an abstraction happening somewhere?
The answer is maybe.
One pocket in, one pocket out.
Yeah, it's probably going to be an intents-based system, right? Okay. So that $100 with the USDT will probably get sent to some kind of solver network. Oh, okay,
in that case, I would say, yes, it is the $100.
Yeah, like, and it gets sent there, and then they go and do some stuff off-chain or buy it on Binance or whatever. And then, you know, your address on, let's say it's on Solana, right? I really should check out where it is. It's funny. It's weird because I was literally, I looked up the market cap. I looked up all this stuff on CoinGecko this morning, but I don't remember looking at which network it was on. But anyway, so yeah, it will do that for you basically. And so you have a thing that you want to do, right? And in Web2 land, you know.
It's on Solana.
It's on Solana. Yeah, I figured.
Of course.
But I think it was launched from not pump.fun. I think it was launched from Dumpy.
I'm seeing it on pump.fun.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, pump.fun. I mean, well, is that the real Mudang?
It's got the $250 million market cap. Right, I checked that.
Cool. Okay, nice. That's nice.
I know how to not get rugged.
So there's a thing that you want to do. There's a job that you want, which is owning Mudang, and the system should be able to solve it for you, right?
Okay.
And because we are a rich full stack application, we can solve that for you in a multitude of different ways.
Okay. Describe the patron sale. So this is something that just got finished. What was it? What does it do? What's the mechanism? Describe that part of this journey.
Yeah. So I think our view was that we wanted to have as many people be bought into this journey as possible, right? We wanted as wide a distribution, you know, this is an attention game, right? And in my experience, people pay more attention to things that they have some kind of token ownership of, right? Whatever it is, right? If you own the token, you're going to pay attention to it.
Right.
And so we created this, you know, I guess like NFT, right? That you could own and show your patronage of this platform, right? And, you know, it was fairly successful, I would say. You know, we tried to balance a bunch of different factors, but we got, I want to say maybe 300 to 500 of the, you know, prominent people in the crypto community as patrons, which was what we were hoping for. Because, you know, as I said at the beginning, those are the people that are going to be using Infinex and talking about the fact that they use it, it works, they've looked at the tech, you know, whether they're a security researcher or a DeFi integrator or a protocol builder or whatever it is, they're going to have some angle where they're like, I actually looked into this and I like how they integrate Aave and Morpho, right? Or I actually looked into passkeys and I like how Posky's work. I was a Posky skeptic and now I'm bullish on Posky's, right? So there's a bunch of different people with different perspectives, different audiences that I think it's critical that we have their attention to make sure as we're rolling stuff out and we're building the platform that people are paying attention, talking about it, advocating for it. And so that was the purpose of the patron sale and it went really well from that perspective. So.
And in this patron sale, Infinex sold $65 million of these patron NFTs. What is Infinex going to do with that money? What is that going to?
Yeah, so to date, I'd been bootstrapping the project.
Payne Warwick has been bootstrapping.
Yes, literally for the last 18 months. And we have 60 people. So it's like not a small bootstrapping exercise. Yeah. It's not like two guys in a garage, right? But it got to the point where, and this is, I think, part of, let's call it the structural issue that we have in the market right now, where, you know, people are excited about a project and they want to be involved and they can't, for whatever reason, get involved until much later in the cycle, mm-hmm. right? And so I was like, look, I can keep bootstrapping this for a long time, right? You know, probably not forever, but like I could do it for another 2 years if I really wanted to, right? Comfortably. And so this was not even really about raising the money. Like I could have kept paying people salaries and we could have kept doing stuff. It was about the alignment because my very strong view is that in crypto, it's so adversarial that if people don't have alignment, if people don't feel, you know, and in this case, you are a patron of Infinex, like you're like, I believe in this thing and I bought the token to show that I care about this direction. I think this is the right direction, right? If you didn't have that, if there was no opportunity in a normal industry that wasn't full of lunatics, people would just go about their days and they would be like, I have no way to have alignment with this thing, but it's fine and I'll let it live, right? In crypto, unfortunately, we have this environment where if a thing is doing well and I feel like I've missed out on it, my response is to FUD it.
I hate that thing.
I hate that thing.
Yeah.
I hate that thing. I want to kill it. And if you're, let's say, Multicoin, your response is, I'm going to finance a competitor to it, right? And so, you know, we really wanted to try and avoid that, right? We wanted people to feel like they had a chance to kind of get involved in the project as early as possible. And, you know, again, from that perspective, it went really well. So originally we were not even going to include VCs. We were like, we actually don't want VC money. It's not about the money. I talked to a bunch of my friends who are VCs and they were like, this feels weird, right? Like, you know, why would you exclude VCs if the patron sale is designed to be like egalitarian and the same, this, you know, everyone pays the same price, all of that stuff. Like all things being equal, like we can help you, right? And I think that, you know, there's a range of different VCs out there, right? There's some that are like absolutely mercenary and, you know, they are just extracting max value and, you know, the incentives are set up so that they can, right? So fine. And then there are ones where, you know, they're neutral, right? And then there are ones where they're like genuinely value add. And the genuinely value add ones, I can see why they'd be like, eh, this feels dumb. Like, don't exclude us. We want to help. We like this as well.
We want to add value, but we need to be aligned.
Yes. Yeah. We need alignment. Right. And so again, I think that we were like, okay, you know what? Fine. Everyone gets to play. We're not going to pick, you know, you don't get to play. You do whatever. We'll let everyone play. You know, we'll let everyone become a patron. And again, I think one of the measurements of success for me was like, just distribution, like how wide was the distribution, you know, how many different facets of crypto, you know, and like the Solana ecosystem, the Ethereum ecosystem, you know, individual L2 ecosystems, like we nailed all of that stuff. And I think we've got a really good base of support and, you know, it's going to be hugely valuable next year.
Right. 300 to 500 patrons is a pretty good base of support, but I think Infinex wants, you know, millions of users. In the future, is there, are there plans to like grow that base of support even wider? Like there are current interested, perhaps users of Infinex or people that might want to show their patronage. Is that opportunity available for them in the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, it's an NFT, right? So the token will launch like sometime in October. I think there's like an agreement that has to launch in, via governance within 30 days or whatever. So there'll be this NFT that's floating around, right? You know, it's not a token. It's not going to get listed on Binance. You know, it's not going to be on exchanges. But, you know, presumably there'll be people, you know, who have liquid patrons that will want to sell them or whatever. And like any NFT, it will just trade. It'll have a floor price and, you know, people will be able to do whatever they want. So, you know, I think there'll be an opportunity, you know, on secondary marketplaces or whatever, whether it's OpenSea or you know, Blur or whatever, for people to turn up and, you know, buy a patron if they want, right? But again, I think the important thing was that people felt like they had the ability to kind of access it first, right? Like if I've been paying attention to Infinex for the last 9 months, right? It feels weird if a bunch of VCs are able to like get access to the project and I'm excluded. And then, you know, I turn up 9 months later and it's like, oh, now, you know, these guys are just going to, you know, dump this token. Like the current meta of like, you know, 3 or 4 rounds, a pre-TGE, the token list on Binance, and then all the VCs are dumping on you. It's just not great.
Right. So what's next for the Infinex roadmap?
Integration.
What's on there? Okay.
Just rolling out integrations as fast as we can.
Integrations with DeFi apps across the
DeFi apps, you know, chain signatures with Near, you know, rolling out support for Litecoin, Bitcoin, all of that stuff. Like that's the key.
And then what's kind of like the longer term time horizon? The trajectory is trying to become like feature complete with Binance. When do you think you
probably
get
next year? Next year, you know, Binance has a lot of weird and wonderful little features. I think that like the key 5 features we should be able to nail early next year. Once we've got that, then it's sort of picking and choosing which things make sense to kind of, you know, pull in basically.
Right. And then the competition here. You're swinging for the fences.
100%.
You're going for Binance. You're not even going for Coinbase. You keep on using Binance.
Like we have to take down centralized exchanges. Centralized exchanges have to be a footnote in history. In 50 years' time, we'll look back and go, of course there were centralized exchanges, right? In the same way that there were like steam-powered railroads, right? Like it was a technology that had to exist as a stepping stone to some new thing. And now we live in a world that is in a better state, right? But we couldn't have gotten there without going through centralized exchanges. So they served a purpose. They had an ecological niche that was very important for a period of time. And now we need to kill them.
Okay, if people are piqued by Infinex, they haven't opened it up yet. Where should they go? What should they do? How should they learn about Infinex?
Yeah, so infinex.xyz, if you deposit $50, there's a $50 minimum deposit on any one of the supported chains. You can play Bull Run, which is this little trading card game. It's quite fun. It's in preseason at the moment. It's going to launch on Blast, I think, in about a week.
Cool. Kane, how much are you clocking in at? What are you waiting these days?
I was 178 this morning.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, we're getting close.
We're getting pretty close.
We're getting pretty close. Yeah.
I got up to 174 and then I came back down to 172, but we still got another week.
Yeah, I think we'll get there. I can get down to 175.
Yeah. I'll get there for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and if I need to, I'll just chug like 2 pounds of water before weighing.
Yeah, I just won't drink for a day. I think we'll get there. It's going to be fun. I've been training hard.
Have you had any combat experience? I didn't ask you when we.
I did Taekwondo and karate growing up.
Okay.
But you know, like I was until I was like 12 or something like that.
Okay.
And then I boxed a little bit in high school for like, you know, not even, it was like an elective sport you could do.
Sure.
You know, and again, never like been in a match, right? I've never been in a televised fight, I would say.
No, I almost was there.
Yeah.
And then I broke a rib, of course.
Yeah.
Polymarket has a heavily favored towards Kane.
Yeah, it must be like some kind of liberal. Is it a liberal bias?
I thought it was conservative bias. Dan Spencer says it's a liberal bias.
Yeah.
That's a hot take. I've always thought it was a conservative bias.
Yeah, it must be conservative bias. Yeah. I don't know. It's not super liquid though. There's only 10K on there. So, you know, you can.
Yeah, anyone could move the market.
Anyone could move the market.
Yeah. Here's the shape up right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Kane, this has been great. Thanks for coming over to the Bankless Studio. And also, I think on behalf of the industry, thank you for trying to take down centralized exchanges.
Amazing.
It's a very noble goal.
Yeah.
I hope you succeed.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'll see you in Utah.
See you in Utah.